President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July 7th on the West Coast, now July the 8th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network and hope you find tonight's show informative and entertaining. Entertaining. Why? Well, I've got a couple of news cameos, we'll call them, or vignettes. These are short little stories. Actually, I'm taking an extract out of an article posted at, and I'm not sure what I should call this website because they call themselves two names now, 4winds10.com and truthwinds.com. And I found a little portion about TSA that Casper, whose name we really don't know, let's assume it's Casper the Friendly Ghost. This is the guy that's revealing to the world what's going on behind the scenes with the prosperity funds, the Nasara funds, and the tiers 1 through 10 payments to the various countries that allegedly supported and participated in a program to restructure and, let's say, rebuild the world's economy through investments. And basically everybody's gotten ripped off. It's one huge Ponzi scheme. But at one point, and this was his add-on, as he calls it, from July the 6th, he says, and I quote, TSA says they must now look out for surgically implanted bombs. Going to have to open you up if you want to fly. Going to have to inspect your gizzard. Aha, says their $8 per hour former child molesting badge wearing goon. Quote, that looks like a terrorist gizzard to me. Going to have to send you to the $10 per hour supervising chief of terrorist gizzard inspectors, unquote. Still quoting him, he says, why does no one ever suggest the obvious solutions? Put Muslims on a plane by themselves, then tow the plane through the terrorist gizzard bomb detonator before takeoff. Thought that was an interesting comment and that you might enjoy that. Now, getting to more serious things, this was forwarded to me by Bruce in St. Charles, Missouri. This is a note from a police officer in Texas. Now, we talk about the over-the-edge brutality exhibited by many police officers during traffic stops, the illegal entering of your home with a battering ram, former police chief of the city of Los Angeles in the 1980s and possibly early 1990s was adept at using this battering ram device that they had attached to a tank or something like that, and they would just barrel through someone's front door under the auspice of searching for drugs. Often people were injured, I think, on a few occasions. Some people may have even been killed back in that time, and people were outraged by the use of that thing, and I think it eventually stopped. But fret not, they started using SWAT teams and all kinds of tactical teams, taking in the ATF agents, the FBI, and sheriff's departments, police departments, and they would go in and guns ablaze and shoot up an elderly couple in their 80s or early 90s. This happened many, many times. And then you have the tasing incidents that occur in public on the back roads of America. And hundreds of people have died from that. You've had people tased in airports. So this police officer, unidentified, sends a note. He says, "I get irritated when people come down on our police officer saying that they don't care about others. Well, here's a story that clearly shows not all cops are in that category. This story involves a police department in the small hill country town of Fredericksburg, Texas, who reported finding a man's body last Saturday in the early evening in the Pedernales River near the State Highway 87 bridge. The dead man's name would not be released until his family had been notified. The victim apparently drowned due to excessive beer consumption while visiting someone in Kerrville. He was wearing black fishnet stockings, a red garter belt, a pink G-string, purple lipstick, and an Obama T-shirt. The police removed the Obama T-shirt to spare his family any unnecessary embarrassment. See there, Texas police do care." So I thought you would appreciate that one. Now, on a little bit more serious note, I received a transcript of an email that is posted on a couple of websites, actually. And I'm going to share this story. I had spoken about this story with my guests after last night's show, Ken Adachi and Zura Nova Star Livingstone. And we hadn't discussed this topic, but I thought I would read the gist of what was published. A process server has delivered a Hawaii court-issued subpoena to Loretta J. Fuddy, director of the Hawaii Department of Health, commanding her to, this is a quote, "to produce at the time, date, and place set forth below the following documents, electronically stored information or objects, and permit their inspection, copying, testing, or sampling of the material," unquote. Original 1961 typewritten birth certificate number 10641 for Barack Obama III, issued 08/08/1961, signed by Dr. David Sinclair, Stanley Ann Dunham Obama, and Registrar Lee, stored in the Health Department of the State of Hawaii from 08/08/1961 until now. The subpoena allows Fuddy until August 8, 2011 at 10 a.m. to produce the document. Now, coincidentally, this was supposed to have done, I think, around June 28th, if I recall what Ken Adachi informed me. He had seen this and actually written an article on this. We hadn't heard anything about it. And so I clicked on the link that was associated with this, and it took me to a site where the document was actually posted. And it's a federal court document written in what I would call penciled in chicken scratch. It's handwritten by the clerk of court there in Hawaii, and basically saying the same things that I just read to you. Why it wasn't typed out, why there's not a signature of a judge. Here we have all of a sudden these clerks of courts are issuing subpoenas, and I didn't think that I thought they were supposed to process them. They were supposed to validate that they were filled out correctly, and they get forwarded to the judge's legal aid, whoever that might be. And the judge will then either have a review presented to him or her, or will have to take the case under due diligence and read the document and then make a determination as to whether or not he's going to sign it. And I would even think that on some level that this would have to be produced in a hearing. If the case is outstanding, and they do name a case number, but the document says Tates versus As True. But it's written as if Astru is a name. Makes no sense to me, unless it's just typical legal speak. then it makes all the sense in the world. But I have to tell you that this was posted first on another website, because there's a link to where this document and this story was found. And it opens up a Pandora's box of information, folks, when you go to the website and do some real research, some original research. And I'm going to be able to corroborate what I've been saying for the past 4 years to everyone in my listening audience, and certainly within the context of my articles, that there are certain people out there pretending like they're filing lawsuits to force the usurper to prove who he is. But notice this document did not mention certificate of live birth. That's the constitutional requirement. There's nothing demanding anyone provide any proof of natural-born citizenship. That is a stipulation in the Constitution as well, that both parents of anyone running for the office of the presidency must be natural-born citizens. Absolutely, both parents must be born natural citizens in the United States. So this is nothing but a bunch of weird games. In fact, from what I found, this is nothing but a psyop. It's a psychological operation, as I said it was from the beginning. And when I suggested Orley Tate take my analysis of the phony Obama photoshopped photographs alleging to be his family in Africa and his family in Hawaii and Indonesia and the planet Venus, you might as well take those into court. That's going to show the fraud on a multiplicity of levels. And her response was, "I can't do that. I can't do that." And I said, "Why not?" And she wouldn't answer the question. I knew then that she was a phony. I knew that the lawsuits were staged and they were intended to support this dialectical argument going on between Hawaii and Kenya. And I can tell you what I found is more of the same corruption I've been reporting since this radio show started, since I began writing for the Idaho Observer, and prior to that, when I was a guest on other radio shows. Many were on Patriot Networks. Not exclusively, but nevertheless, we do get to the truth. It takes us time, but I found a major axle that's attached to the wheel that's been helping steam this little Hegelian dialectical ruse along the road to nowhere. So that said, tonight's Thursday, and we have a return guest who's been with me throughout the 4 years that I've been on Evident Footprints, and he is a historian, he's an environmental scientist, a chemist, an herbalist, and a musician, my good friend, Mr. Michael Anthony. Michael, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Don. Great, thanks. Great to be back, Don.
Well, information overload tonight, or do you
find it? There's never information overload with you, Don. I'm still back on the Touch 'em, Squeeze 'em agency and what they were doing.
Well, I did get a kick out of the T-shirt story, you know.
It should have said hope and change on the back of the T-shirt.
I think it said something like that on the G-string, actually. I think it said, hope you change.
Yeah. There you go.
Anyway, we have to keep the show clean tonight, so.
Do my best.
I promise I won't use the usurper's name anymore on the show tonight.
We'll affectionately refer to him as Obama.
Yeah. I'm telling you, Michael, they spared no expense putting out doublespeak and disinformation on the internet. This This document led me to a treasure trove of information. Absolutely a treasure trove of who can be connected to this. It's
well,
amazing.
It is, and you're always digging it up for sure. But what's curious with this Orly Tate's lady is that obviously they wouldn't want, Obama does not want his unknown mysterious past becoming a topic among the American people, especially questioning where he was born. Mm-hmm. And don't you think they, why would she just bring up that and make a case out of it and bring it to the attention of people that otherwise would have no idea, Don?
Well, you know, I'll answer that question in a multidimensional way. When I discovered that her husband actually ran a company called Daylight Descartes Software, which was working hand-in-hand with Oracle producing the genomic sequences for vaccinations and doing that for Novartis and publishing this on a Chinese website, she denied it. Now, I didn't publish that on the internet. I was just doing my regular research. Let me see what I can find out about where she's from. You know, how is it that this person can be a dentist and an attorney and, you know, no one ever heard of her as an attorney before, and she's not in her office, you know, fixing teeth.
Well, what is curious always is when somebody like that does come out of nowhere, gets in the limelight for a little bit.
Nonstop.
But actually, hold on, Don. yes, she was on mainstream a little bit media for a little while presenting it too, if I recall right, at least some cable anyway.
Yeah, but they made a mockery of her.
Sure. So, yeah. But again, she's raising an issue that I would think Obama much prefer never was discussed.
Well, but you have to ask the question, who is she doing this for? She's not even an American herself, from what I know, unless somebody gave her some secret papers. Did you ever hear of her as a dentist, as this, well, you're not in Southern California, you know.
Right, Don.
You're not down there with that machine that operates down there. I suspected that she worked for certain intelligence agencies secretly, and in particular one agency, and it came out that she had spent some time in Israel. So you can start connecting dots, and you can see that there are some things that just don't make sense.
So as far as her lawsuits against Obama being a not unnatural born American, so she actually would be then working for a party trying to undermine
somebody trying to control Obama. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can see that as a plausible theory for sure, Don.
And then now you have all this groundbreaking research by certain individuals about Hawaii. And then suddenly you have all this groundbreaking research about the same people about Kenya. Okay. Which is it? Now you can say, well, they're demanding this because if they can't produce it there, then that validates the Kenya story. But I can tell you, you go read my Three Stooges Go to Washington article, part 6. Where I do a heavy-duty photo analysis on the alleged relatives, and all the photographs are compilations. They've been photoshopped. They're absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
They're ridiculous. I've seen better things on some of the kids' channels.
Yeah, everything about Obama's background, truly a question mark.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
And, sure.
You know, this claim that he's a lawyer and all of that, you know. That's,
well, a lawyer, you know, that didn't hold his license too long anyway. He was taken. He was taken from the old Nobel Peace recipient there.
Or that he graduated from Columbia University.
Everything about this guy.
Everything has been phony.
Yeah.
You know, we're told he plays golf. Have you actually seen him playing golf? You know,
I honestly don't watch much of the boob tube, but no, I haven't seen any photos with the old bummer boy there holding a golf club.
Well, I saw one, but I failed to inspect to see if it was also photoshopped. But that's the story they put out, you know.
Sure.
And he's had more vacations than he has golf tournaments, you know.
Yeah.
And
he's living it up as president, that's for sure. Traveled around the world, taking our whole military with him, costing us, what, $250 million a day?
Yeah, exactly.
And travels with an entourage of 200 chefs. The guy must like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's pretty pathetic. This guy is not an American. That's for dang sure. And he has no regard for the hardworking American and where that tax money they steal from them goes and how it's used. No regard at all.
I do want to make one comment about this alleged subpoena, okay? But I can tell you that this is an intelligence agency psychological operation by who the people who wrote this allegedly are. Mm-hmm. I can identify that they're not who they claim to be in terms of what this is, but what it leads to is off the charts. You can trust me. We're not going to go into that at all tonight because it's too complicated, okay? But it's going to show instantly even that the website where this is posted is not what it's purported to be. How is it that this website comes up with this document, which to me looks as phony as a Federal Reserve note?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But let's imagine for a moment that this is a genuine document, that this is actually true. Just imagine that, okay? I would ask the rhetorical question that if Miss Loretta J. Fuddy fails to produce this document now on a second deadline, which is stated to be or alleged to be the 8th of August of 2011, that would be the 50th anniversary of its original publication, which I find kind of interesting. Obama's birthday is alleged to be August the 4th, 1961.
That's when he was hatched?
Yeah. Yeah. That's when the test tube cracked, I think. But anyway, let's imagine that it's real and that Miss Laura J. Fuddy, the director of the Hawaii Department of Health, fails to produce that. Are they going to call this hoax the Fuddy Duddy?
Yeah. If they don't, I will. I mean, got to take advantage of that one. Can't let that pass up.
That's my question. But I can tell you, man, this thing is... You want to talk about a Ponzi scheme? This is a Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
This and it's connected to Ponzi schemes. Let me tell you. Oh, it's connected to a Pandora's box, a plethora of corruption.
Just another racket, as usual.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this isn't going to make sense to a lot of people until I go into this in more detail on a forthcoming show. If it's not tomorrow, it'll be sometime next week. You're gonna find it fascinating. I'll say that much. Now, we didn't plan on talking about all this tonight. This is sometimes how the show works, and you know very well that things happen. If I'm doing some research, or you or someone else we know is doing some research, and we uncover some truth, we like to bring it forth as soon as possible. So people don't waste their time fretting over whether or not these people are going to succeed in these sitcoms that they're portraying as legal maneuvers. You know, we hear these stories that the usurper spent millions of dollars preventing people from seeing the truth, from revealing the truth. And then when they finally get around to publishing something, Okay, well, here it is. You asked for it. You were supposed to provide that from the beginning.
That's right.
You were supposed to provide that to the Democratic National Committee prior to your nomination. You were supposed to have been vetted out by the FBI.
And the Election Commission.
And the Secret Service and the Federal Election Commission, yes. Okay.
Yeah. I guess just a little oversight, Don, just a slight amount. You know, those government workers, they work hard, Don. I think they have to work at least 150 days of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's that $200,000 a year salary. I mean, a little oversight like that, oh, well.
Mm-hmm. And I had previously done the genealogy on John Sidney McCain III, a.k.a. John Sidney McCann.
Mm-hmm.
Or John McCann, and from Scotland, and I had proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the guy was not born anywhere close to America.
Okay? And that's why he never mentioned it regarding Obama during the campaign.
No, but they had Hillary Clinton and Obama proposed a special resolution, you know, on the floor of the Senate to declare him eligible to run as a U.S. citizen. If he was born in America, why would they have to do that?
I didn't recall hearing. Really?
Yeah, that was in March, late March of 2008. I'm fairly certain that's when that occurred. And then
that resolution was for Obama?
No, that was for McCain.
For McCain. Okay.
No, they snuck the usurper's version in a bunch of resolutions that they were honoring traditional Hawaiian figures for having accomplished this or that, and the anniversaries of movements that occurred in Hawaii. You know, it was a bunch of mumbo jumbo, and they had Barack Hussein Obama, a junior, was born in Hawaii. That was tucked in the middle of it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? They did that. Sure. It seemed to me, I have so many dates in the back of my mind, but it seemed like it was around May of 2008 that mm-hmm. that was done. Okay?
Mm-hmm. There you go. I mean, that sums it up right there. They were trying to give McCain red carpet treatment. And at the same time, McCain never brought up the birth issue for Obama.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are all in cahoots. They're all a bunch of traitors or foreign agencies, and they have to be held accountable.
I proved by examining the photos that the alleged original Barack Obama Sr. was never even in Hawaii. Because when you add exposure drive to the photograph, The Negro men in the photos or the photo wearing sailor suits, U.S. Navy sailor suits, remained black or dark skinned, and the African man turned white. Explain that to me, okay? That's what happens when you reveal a fraudulent photograph, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he was not even there. They inserted an image of a man. And everybody says he doesn't look like him. So this guy was just some clown they took a picture of and put in there, okay?
Yeah, no, obviously not a lot of thought going into piecing together a background on this guy so that they had some kind of material to present, photographs, family, you know, pictures, some kind of tangible evidence that he's a real natural-born human being, plus also an American.
Now, you, anyone out there that wants to argue the legitimacy of my research in that regard and saying, well, he's not certified as a forensic investigator of photography or something like that, well, there are plenty of people who are, and they didn't find what I found.
Hey, the bottom line, Don, sure, Don, and even for those that still want to make that claim, the bottom line, as you have covered numerous times, this guy can't produce a legitimate birth certificate, period.
Or a legitimate social security number.
That's right.
Or a college selective service registration card. Or
that's right.
A college transcript.
That's right. Can't produce any of that.
Oh, the only thing legitimate that was produced in writing, though we didn't see copies of it, we got accounts of it through the media, you know, the Somerville News in Somerville, Massachusetts. And I talked to the guy that did the original investigation, and he claims he didn't know where, you know, that this is usual. Maybe the tickets went in the sea with Osama bin Laden. Maybe they draped him with that, you know, because they didn't have a Saudi Arabian flag to drape him in, or an Afghan flag, or an Afghan. But he was able to amass 20-year-old or nearly. There were 19-year-old traffic citations. 19 years. And they claim they only paid $400 fine for this. And their excuse was, oh, yeah, lots of people have unpaid tickets. But mm-hmm. lots of people aren't running for the presidency of the United States, for one thing. Okay? And then this is allegedly when he's at Harvard that this occurred?
Sure, Don. Everything is so sketchy about this guy. Obviously fraudulent. Major cover-ups, major BS being fed to the public every time an issue's raised regarding this. It's really disgusting. I just can't wait for the day of reckoning, the day of accountability, and trash these dirtbags and make them hold them accountable, finally, for high treason. As well as foreign agents and racketeering.
Yeah. Eight of those citations were allegedly issued in one day, in the same day. You know? Today, you look at a cop wrong, and they call in the tow truck. You know, you're tased, you're handcuffed, you're stomped on, you're dragged into either a paddy wagon. Back in those days, They would have certainly been talking to each other about this.
Sure.
Because they run background checks on every instance. And, hey, wait, you know, somebody checked on this. Or are they just going around and collecting the tickets, gathering them up at the end of the day? I don't know. They didn't have a problem issuing the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a problem adding up the money. Why was that ignored? Oh, it would have been an embarrassment. It might lead us to the truth, you see. But while they were saying that he was a member of this church in Chicago for 20 years, even now the 20 years has not elapsed. That won't occur till the year 2012.
Mm-hmm.
If he began going there when he said he did in 1992.
Which is most unlikely.
Yeah, that
I
in
think
2012
this guy
is going to be the 20-year period, you
everything's
see.
Everything's a lie. Yes, sir, yeah. Don. Everything's a lie with this guy. More than GW, more than Slick Willie. Plenty of lies about their background when they came in. Plenty. Mm-hmm. American people are suckers for losers as presidents. That's obvious. But this guy, oh, bummer. I mean, the pile of lies is way beyond what they did for Bush and GW and Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
It's just incredible. I mean, it's just constant lie after lie. Everything about this guy is fraud.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he's a puppet of the New World Order.
Absolutely.
He was created to be that, okay?
He is set up to be exactly where he is right now to serve their agenda at the final stages of their globalist agenda. They feel confident that they're going to close it out with the destruction of the United States with Obama. You know, R.J. Hender, on his talk shows in the past, when I would hear him discussing with guests as to why they call Obama the Undertaker, as the Secret Service has code names for all the presidents and their family, and he was questioning why they call Obama the Undertaker. So I called in and I said, R.J., the reason is this dirtbag is the closer. The previous scumbag presidents and their administrations, the Bushes, especially GW's 8 years, and Slick Willie's Commie Clinton's 8 years. These dirtbags have dug a hole. And then, of course, Pappy, the old Krautbush at before preceding Slick Willie. These dirtbags have dug a hole so deep for our country that this scumbag Obama, his job is number one only. Throw the dirt on us. We're in the hole. Throw the dirt on us. That's why they call him the Undertaker. And I just, it's going to be very curious to see. Now, the Republican Party is coughing up a bunch of losers as usual. You'd think they could come up with a real contender that would blow away this foreign-born dirtbag that nobody really likes as president anymore. But no, they got to cough up these weak, lame horses, as always, so that when the horse race starts for the presidential election, Obama's not going to have much competition. It's incredibly obvious.
Yeah, well, and then you're dealing with the myth that your vote counts and that elections are actually honest. Look at what happened in 2000. Look what happened in 2004.
Absolutely, Don. You're right about that, too.
And I can tell you, you know, I didn't vote for a Republican nor for a Democrat in 1988, and I got a thank you card from George H.W. Bush and the Republican Party. You know, it was a postcard. Can you believe that?
You must have felt good that you were still on his list of thank yous, even though you didn't vote for him.
That was 12 years before they invented hanging chads.
Right, Don. Sure. Yeah, you know, it's all a racket. Everything is rigged. We are in bad shape. And the talk lately with Obama is talk about revoking his Nobel Peace Prize. And I'm like, finally award him the dumbbell piece of crap prize. Instead, that's what he should get.
Well, going back to this whole thing, what this document led to, I will say this, as I have said on many, many shows, that when I start looking at who's behind all of these psyops and these counterintelligence or these COINTELPRO, as they like to call them, operations that are intended to discredit people who are revealing the truth, it always leads to someone, some entity involved in the space program or in the aerospace program. And this document does as well. This one does too. Now, it's not a real cut and dry clear path until you do some of the research that I've done, but it didn't take me very long because I finally saw something that I had suspected for a number of years, but I saw something quite clearly that screamed out, Look at me, pay attention, because you're going to find the truth if you look a little deeper. And the whole process took me about 10 minutes once I had come to that realization. But it's going to open a Pandora's box of corruption.
Well, you know, Don, I mean, there's no questioning that NASA's a front for a lot of activity. And it's all integrated in the military-industrial complex. It's just another major division of that operation. And so it's all intertwined, no question about it, Don.
Yes.
No surprises there.
Now, we took up a lot of time on this topic, and I guess I hope it's interesting to the listening audience out there. I hope their ears perked up. Because, people get in, they want to believe somebody's leading the way. They want to believe that, or they want to really, I should be saying they would like to know. It's their intention to really know the truth about things. But we're caught in this belief system. You're told a story, and the story's repeated over and over and over again. People coming out of the woodwork for the first time in history, and their aliases. The name that's presented to us is an alias. And then we're given this story about all the research they've done on an issue, And what they're trying to do is deflect the truth or minimize the damage done by the truth that's come out with some of my guests, some of my research and their research and our collaborative efforts. And the attacks go toward this same group of people. And then when you start investigating who these people are behind the scenes, it takes us to the same conspirators, you see?
Yes, sir, Don.
These aren't theories, Michael. This is these
understood,
are facts.
Bunny. Absolutely. As you continue to dig deeper into the root cause of what's going on, you'll find out that it all basically emanates from one major root. And so, sure, yes, Don. And there will always be those to muddy up the waters to prevent anyone that is attempting to track down the truth. There will always be obfuscation and those that know how to muddy the waters. It takes patience, tremendous discernment as you continue to wade through muddy waters and look for the truth that's still there. And that takes a lot of effort, but it pays off every time for those that remain persistent and patient. And so, yes, Don, absolutely.
Now, you, and I want to thank you personally for some photos that you sent me. I actually got an interesting one from you that I think I'd seen it once many years ago, but didn't have a copy of it. You sent me some photographs of some flying saucers, the Vril craft and some other craft the Hanabau craft. And I did a little bit of research on Peenemünde and then the later on connections after World War II of Peenemünde and Los Alamos together. And the key person involved in that whole thing was one Werner von Braun, who was the rocket scientist there, who had actually donated his family's farmland to the German government to use as a rocket testing facility. And coincidentally, when I was doing my George H. Scherf Jr. research, I ended up going up to Peenemünde in Germany. That's on the northern coast of Germany there. And it makes a heck of a lot more sense. Now, I didn't write that into the research, but I could come out with a part three of that whole expose I did on the Bush Walker clan, Nikola Tesla's stolen inventions. It's obvious that much of the help the Germans got was coming from the stolen Tesla research. And those photographs actually inspired me a couple of days ago to do some deep research into what the Germans were doing and their interests. But I can tell you unequivocally that though they were building flying saucers, they had established a propulsion system that enabled them to get liftoff, in other words, escape gravity, much like an airplane does. It was more likely a rocket thrust engine.
Initially, yes, Don. Initially, their prototypes.
Though they did eventually develop.
Oh yeah.
Anti-gravity.
Oh yes, electromagnetic.
Many of the craft. I mean, they would look real cute sitting on a pole in front of a Dairy Queen. Or a big boy restaurant, because they're not in interplanetary craft. They're not capable of going outside of the atmosphere and having anybody survive.
Yes, not the early ones. No.
Yes, gun turrets and.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know, those gun turrets, according to, I believe it's Henry Stevens in his work on Hitler and suppressed technologies, His take is that they are not gun turrets, but they're laser, ray guns using lasers. Donner ray guns, he referred to them as.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact of the matter is, those Nazis, when it's, you know, at first it's hard to believe, but when you look in deeper into what they were doing, it's all so feasible. Lasers were already established. They were making synthetic rubies back in the 30s, in the late 20s.
Yes.
And so feasibility of having a laser is definitely high. And of course, the lasers were used as a tool in a number of areas of science, but one of them, as it turns out, was for enriching uranium,
mm-hmm.
okay, through a unique process. Without going through an elaborate reactor, they were able to devise ways. And, of course, the scientists working on this particular approach, because there were scientists all over the place with their own projects. But the particular scientist using a laser approach for enriching uranium, very clever.
You can change water into gold with the microwave oven if you know how to do it.
There you go. That's right, Don. It's all these energies, these very high energy states can cause and can create these kind of physical reactions. And the Nazis were big into it way back in the 20s and the 30s. And it all actually, Don, stems from alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
It was really the discovery in the 20s by German scientists of precipitating gold using high-energy mediums, which was very big, novel in that in the 20s. That was really major scientific breakthroughs and using technology. But all of a sudden, as it was being highly talked about, discussed among the scientific communities, and more pursuits into that area, because it was definitely modern alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
It was bridging the gap from old alchemy from the up to the mid-1800s, which was very esoteric. They were bringing it to the forefront with technology. And all of a sudden, it went quiet. And that's when the Nazis were really establishing themselves as the ruling party in Germany. And so they took all this science and kept it quiet for themselves. And so with lasers, electromagnetic energy development came along as well. And next thing you know, they had anti-gravity craft.
Yeah, and you know, we hear these stories about Foo Fighters, okay? Now, that could have been a variety of phenomena that were occurring when the pilots said they saw these globes of light or globes of, you know, visible globes following their airplane or flying beside them as they're on a bombing mission.
That's right.
Or while pictures. They're in the middle of a dogfight.
Yep, and I have some pictures of that occurrence while they're in an air raid of some type, and you see these glowing objects nearby.
Now,
but you also have some pics, and I believe I gave you both of them now, recently and in the past, where you see clearly a Nazi craft being photographed from some kind of airplane. I don't know if it was Ally or not. But you can mm-hmm. clearly see the Luftwaffe emblem on that craft. It's crystal clear.
Well,
and then the one I'm looking at now that I just sent to you recently, it's a little fuzzy. There's a lot of clouds. You can see a plane nearby. And there's a third party taking a photo of the flying disc with the airplane nearby. And so I'm not sure who took that picture, whether it was Ally or the Germans. But clearly up in the sky, a lot of clouds, and you can see a plane not too far away, giving you perspective regarding that flying disc.
It looks like a Messerschmitt. You know, it's got the typical markings.
It does look German on the plane.
Yeah.
Could have been just a test run, and these guys were out monitoring and observing it and taking pictures for the reports.
Yeah.
But Tons of pictures, Don. Stunning pictures. Kraft on the ground, bunch of Nazis standing all around it. Numerous pics like that.
Yeah.
Now,
I've had people write to me and or call into the show and say, well, you know, what movie was that? That was in a movie. You know, that was in a movie that picture was taken. And I tell them, tell me what movie it was.
Yeah, that's right. What was the movie? Sure.
You know, of course, there's never a response.
But and there's more than one of different style craft on the ground with Germans all around it. More than one. So now, actually three or four.
Yeah, in that series of photos, at the bottom, there are some very interesting shots of some different craft. They seem to be more like some of the craft that the Greys and the Reptilians fly. Three. Well, they have wheels on here. In other words, they're rolling these around on the ground while after they land.
Sure.
To put them in a hangar or whatever. But this concept of three pods is found in the craft that the Greys and the Reptilians fly. Possibly in you know, many, many other craft, but I can tell you firsthand
It's a very interesting topic, and it goes in so many directions, of course, Don, because it does raise more questions when you observe this craft. But one thing's very interesting. In some of the pics that I sent you, you notice at the end of one of those emails, there's a book called Flying Saucers Have Landed by George Adamski, who back in the late 40s, 50s, claimed to have an encounter with the UFOs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, his description on that book of what the UFOs look like is identical to the Nazi craft right above it that I've tied in on that same email. So you can see it's exactly identical to the Adamski illustration.
That doesn't necessarily mean that the origin of the craft that Adamski saw was German, but that the Germans got that design from someone else. They were obviously cooperating with someone.
Yes, I agree, Don. And it could simply be that too. The Nazis were actually just an external apparatus for an inner circle of secret societies that were well into the development of anti-gravity disks since the turn of the century of the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And so the Nazis and Hitler came along just at the perfect timing. In fact, they helped bring them along so that they could devote and concentrate tremendous amount of resources to bring in this idea of this anti-gravity craft, which the secret societies knew all about. It existed previously on this planet, and as well as it still exists among either extraterrestrials or multidimensional beings or beings from the interior of the Earth. It's one or those scenarios or a combination of them. And these people were telepathically in touch through the secret societies with their occult activities and ultimately black magic activities. And so, sure, Don, I agree with you that they were in concert, in league with some kind of influence to help bring this technology about.
Now there is, or I should say, there were numerous accounts of Hitler having consulted with a group of cave-dwelling monks that were in Tibet. When I say cave-dwelling, we're not talking about a hole in the side of a mountain. We're talking about going miles down into the Himalayas.
That's a fact.
And T. Lobsang Rampa, which is an alias that one of the Tibetan monks used. He was a prolific writer of his experiences growing up and being trained in the
Himalayan monastery.
the Patola in Lhasa, Tibet. It was mm-hmm. where he grew up and where he was trained. And he was a seer for the monks there. When the British military or certain
That's right, foreigners. When foreigners, new foreigners would set foot in Tibet back in that period, which was new territory to be discovered by the West, especially mm-hmm. like the British. That's right, Don. Lobsang Rampa was prepared to be very clairvoyant to help the priests there and the Tibetan ruling class mm-hmm. to be able to gauge these foreigners whether or not they could be trusted. And Lobsang Rampa always said the British were no good.
Well, he would see their aura and also, telepathically and deduce whether or not they were telling the truth. And
yeah, that's right.
Signs that's right. In both representations.
Yeah, T. Lobsang Rampa, great reads, a lot of his work. I used to read him a lot when I was a kid. Very fascinating, great information provided from that man. Valuable information, actually, to get you on the path of self-awareness and knowledge and reality and science. These guys are into all of that.
Now, they put him through an initiation. They had artificially opened up
his third eye,
okay, mm-hmm. Using herbs and
an operation.
Yeah, they literally drove a wedge into his skull to mm-hmm. to facilitate this. And they did this. He described a flash of light and how this evolved, but part of his preparation included going down into these deep, dark, they're tunnels, but you get the impression that they're shafts, like mine shafts almost, that they go way deep into the ground.
They go miles in.
And the purpose of that would be both related to the energies that he would be subjected to, as well as the deprivation of light and the overall sensory deprivation of the physical body being in a place like that.
Yes.
And he described his experiences, but that was not the same group of monks that Hitler was communicating with. Now, one of the photos, you sent me a series of three photos. One is on my website. I think it's on my news page. It's the reptilian skull that was found on the Pennsylvania farm
in the 1800s.
Okay. And then after that, there is a lady that has one horn growing out of the middle of the left side of her face.
That's right, an Oriental lady.
Yes, she looks Tibetan, actually, the overall feel. To me, she looks Tibetan, and I'm wondering if it's not a zit.
Okay. Oh, no, it's clearly a horn.
It's a horn, and it appears to be 4 inches or longer.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
One could say that, in a sense, it's grotesque. It's not your everyday average Tibetan woman sitting there. Okay.
I would definitely agree with that. Sure. And you don't see too many women walking around with a horn sticking out of her head.
Yeah, and she's posing. She's sitting down, but you can see sort of a stone or mud clay structure behind her.
Yep, she's living very primitively.
Yes, and she has a staff leaning up against her shoulder. She's got her arm wrapped around it. You can see
she's an older woman in this picture.
Which implies that she probably uses that as a walking cane going up and down inclines, okay, mm-hmm. which would definitely point to a mountainous region. But one wonders how many other people had such growths coming out of their forehead in that town.
Or good question.
One would even wonder how she was treated because of that.
Absolutely, Don. And especially in that ancient culture there where, I'm sure they had taboo all over her. You bet. I mean, anywhere, no matter where you go, you got a horn coming out of your head, I'm sure you got cold treatment most of the time, at least in the beginning.
It adds a whole new meaning to home is where you hang your hat.
Yeah.
You know?
It
looks like a hook.
Sure. You could hang a hat. But what's very interesting, Don, is what you brought up here. You see, now she's coming out of the Orient. Maybe in the Tibet area, you're mentioning about these underground dwellers who were known as the Serpent People, by the way, that the Nazis were looking for in the underground caverns in the Himalayas. The good priests were dwelling on the top of the mountains, but the black magician evil priests were dwelling inside the earth. And the Nazis were big into this, and they had a lot of expeditions there. In fact, I'll send you some pictures, Don, showing the expeditions. And they're supposedly finding the swastika emblem in Tibet as well. And so there's something to all that. And Don, what intrigues me very much with seeing the horns on this female Oriental older lady, plus the one with the skull from the farm in Pennsylvania in the late 1800s, what is very intriguing to me is that, and I wish I had a copy of it. I should have preserved it. I didn't. But back in the latter 90s, in one of those Enquirer-type magazines, might have been Star, if that's what it was called, right on the cover, checking out in a store one day, I seen on the cover of that paper was an article regarding these female archaeologists making a major find in Arizona, where there's a bunch of buried skulls, basically, and they all have horns on their head.
These are human-looking skulls. We want to let people know these aren't cat.
Yes, that's correct. These are all human-looking skulls with horns, and there's a huge, huge pile. Now, I bought that because I had to have that because, boy, I just felt that that was really true. And based on what I knew about the past on this planet, and so I showed some friends, and they were laughing like, come on, Mike, you believe that? Look what it's in. And I said, yeah, that's how they do it sometimes. You guys don't understand that. But I kept saying, there's something to this. I wish I preserved it. It was cheap paper. I left it out in my garage the whole time, and so it didn't hold up after 10 years. But that was before. When I could cut that out and save that article from that gossip magazine or paper, that was before, Don, I came across the photograph of the skull from Pennsylvania and then this woman with the horn. When I seen those pics of that, I thought of that article from Star or Enquirer, whichever one it was, back in the 90s, and I'm like, there you go. There's substantial evidence that could be supporting that story, supposedly in Arizona, of that find.
Yeah. A friend of mine asked me what I thought this woman was saying because her mouth is open like she's talking. And I said, well, one glance at the picture, I think she's saying Ricola. Or, anyway, it's astounding. This picture is astounding.
Yes, it is. It definitely raises a lot of questions.
Yeah, this, and I examined this photo very carefully, and it's not a Photoshop creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to these people with horns from Pennsylvania. This woman, the remote period of this planet, in very remote times, I believe there was a population of human type beings that had horns, and they may even have tails, but I'm just speculating on that. But clearly horns, because we've seen some evidence now.
Well, or they could simply just be the skulls of reptilians.
Yes, sir, Don, which are human-like as far as, you know, biped,
mm-hmm.
all in all, and not anatomy-wise similar. Yep, absolutely, Don. There is something to all that in those two pictures. That's why I shared them with you, as well as anybody else into this topic, because that is evidence. Those pictures are legitimate, and that is clearly proving that somebody was on this planet with horns.
Now, someone, even in the third photo, and it's a it's a more complete skull with two very distinct horns. This looks like this skull was preserved in a multiplicity of ways. First of all, you have a complete skull with showing upper and lower jaw. The whole lower jaw is there. That's right. Now, the teeth look very human.
Right.
But all the other features lead one to presume that this is a reptilian.
It's definitely a demon-looking type of creature. And it's
covered in, you think that's gold, or is that a gold-looking bronze?
Well, it's a hard call from the photo, but it's definitely gold-looking. And it is a ritual skull out of South Africa in a museum there that some tribesmen, you know, used for rituals. And so, of course, they acquired it firsthand through their ancestors. You know, sometime in the past, their ancestors had acquired that either through a warfare with those creatures, or they just came across it after those creatures were gone and they found some remains. But it's very demonic.
Or it was a leader that was treated maybe differently upon than the others.
Yes, it's possible that, you know, at some point in time, whatever skull that being, that the being that had that skull might have been a leader of some kind of tribe, which was a mix of men and whatever they are, some kind of demonic, very demonic-looking type creatures with clear horns on the top of their head.
It's clear that it was dipped in let's say it was dipped in gold.
Yeah, it's preserved with some kind of veneer.
It's fascinating.
It really is.
Now, and that's a reminder of teaching us and training us to be good little gold miners, you know. There's a reverence there for gold. That's what I'm saying.
That's true. And rightfully so, gold is a very special metal.
It has so the appearance. It has the appearance of at least 18 karat gold. Okay.
Sure, it does. I agree, Don. I mean that thing is plated with, looks like gold somehow.
Now you can see that the nasal structure is very pronounced here, as is the chin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As much as the horns are pointed, the nose, the bone structure of the nose is very pointed. Imagine how long that nose might have been.
It's a very long nose, and chin as well,
and
coming out.
Very, very deep set and very large eye sockets as well. Now, what's interesting is that the ear canal, which is behind the eye socket, is that whole structure is much, much larger inside the skull than the orbital region of the eyes.
Yeah,
and,
Don.
And it's higher up as well.
That's right. You know, the ears would be more like, I would say, kind of canine-like, I would think, from the way the ear canals look.
Mm-hmm. They may have been pointy, sort of like Spock or something.
Yep. Like a shepherd's type of ear.
Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, listen, we're out of time, and we're going to have to close here, but I wanted to thank you for being on the show and tackling all these topics off the cuff.
Oh, my pleasure. Always a lot of fun, Don. Thank you.
Eventually, I'll get these published on my website.
Absolutely. So people can access them, and anybody wants to just contact me through email to get to copies. I'll be glad to forward them to you. And Don, you have my email on your website, I believe, so people can find my email right from your website.
Yes.
I'd be glad to send these out if anybody requests that in the meantime.
Yeah, we were going to discuss herbs and the like tonight, but the developments of the past couple of days warranted at least touching upon some of these topics. But
that's fine.
You're scheduled to come on the show again this month. Let me see. You're going to be on the 26th.
Great.
Of the month, which is Tuesday, the last Tuesday of July. So I look forward to having you back on Evident Footprints, and we will go into that discussion. And who knows, if you can send me some more shots like this, I'd like to make some comparisons.
Don, I will. I've got some other amazing shots of creatures and stuff. I don't know if I've shared these with you or not, and so I will send some over to you. Did you ever see the one supposedly out of Arabia in a dried marshland area of a creature that's has a crocodile type of body?
Yes, I have that one.
Okay.
I've seen it in a few places.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It's something to that.
Half human, half crocodile.
It's got a human type head, but very grotesque, very, very, just a very sad looking creature there. And I'm just wondering if that's an old genetic from the pre-Noah time frame, and it's a genetic manipulation, or was it due to that any seed could mix with any seed prior to the flood? But I believe that that creature, and there's reports that there's many of them spotted, are remnants of the pre-Noah time frame.
Mm-hmm.
From the Greek myths where you had half man and half animal of some type. And this creature fits right in with those Greek legends, but obviously still alive to this day.
This woman that I've labeled as Tibetan, just because of the overwhelming feeling that you get, and what appears to logically be a Tibetan woman, may be the result of a liaison between a reptilian and a full-blooded Tibetan woman, and she it's an aberration that would have been carried out through a particular gene sequence. I wonder if she was more angry about having just one horn as opposed to two, or the fact that she had one horn at all.
Well, you know, on the other side of the forehead where the other horn would be, there is some kind of blemish, a dark blemish. I don't know.
It looks like a mole, actually. Yeah.
It does look like a mole. Maybe it was the start of the other horn. It never managed to establish itself. I don't know, but the poor gal for sure. And clearly, Don, some kind of crazy gene combination going on there. From a source that obviously had horns, and no question about it, just makes you think of the old demon stories out of the Bible.
Yeah, she doesn't look.
No, she doesn't look.
You don't get the impression that she's an evil person.
No, you don't.
It's merely a fluke that occurred, mm-hmm. and. Definitely, there's more going on there than a homogenous relationship between two regular people.
Yes.
You know, yes. I don't know how else to put it. Well, Michael, I appreciate you being on the show. I will share with you and my viewing audience soon some photographs of a being that was photographed dead in two different positions. And I recognize it as a chupacabra. And it's the spitting image of a creature, two creatures that I saw in the state of Utah last year.
Does it have wings, Don? Small wings?
If it did, they would have been folded behind it. Mm-hmm. But I saw these two creatures, we'll call them, standing beside a mountain road, eating. Both happened to be standing next to the road eating.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw them at different intervals. I saw them about a quarter mile apart. One was on the right side of the road. I had just, I was winding through this mountain pass. And as I had made a sharp turn to the right, my headlights illuminated everything off to the side of the road before I made a sharp left turn. And this thing was eating, standing up. It was about 3.5 feet tall. It turned and looked at my headlights, had these glaring red eyes.
Wow.
And was holding something with its front paws, standing up. And it just kept eating like it knew I was going to pass. I stepped on the gas a little bit at that point. And then I made a few more of these, serpentine twisting turns on the road, because it's every 100 feet or so there's a major turn, and you had to slow down too to drive safely. And I made one of those turns to the left, and the headlights shown another one standing on the left side of the road, standing just like the other one had been. My first question was, that the same thing I saw on the first turn? And if there's two of these, how many more are there? So I drove safely through the area, but believe me, I didn't slow down much.
And so you have some pictures of a creature that's identical to what you had seen in your car?
Yes, but this creature is allegedly dead, and it's prone. Mm-hmm. But you can get a good look of it. It's identical to what I saw.
I'll be looking forward. When are you posting that, Don?
Well, soon. It'll be soon.
Okay.
But I'll alert you to it. Michael, we're out of time, but thanks again for being on the show.
And it was a pleasure. Thank you, Don.
Look forward to your next appearance on Evident Footprints. And folks, as a reminder, if you are interested in checking out Michael's private stock, go to my website, directlightproductions.com. Click on sponsors, then scroll down a little bit. You'll see Michael Anthony there. Click on that, and you can read about it, and his contact information is on that page. That wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our guest, Michael Anthony. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network over at BBS Radio tonight. We had Seth Hendrick on the sound. I'd like to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest and co-host, our resident science advisor, Mr. Jim Murray, will be our guest. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. And have a good night.